and a good Friday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 in your favorite podcast app. Just search for the Nick Craig Show, hit the subscribe or follow button, and take it with you on demand on your own time. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Well, good Friday morning to you. Some rain moving through earlier in the day today. The weather doesn't look super great throughout the rest of the day. Just kind of on and off showers. Maybe the possibility of a storm heading into the afternoon and evening hours. Hopefully things clear up. Weekend-wise, looks pretty nice. Mid to upper 60s Saturday and Sunday should be relatively clear. So that's what we're looking at weather-wise for the weekend. Turning our attention to some international news this morning, the back-and-forth tit-for-tat battle between the United States and China continues to escalate this morning as China announced within the last couple of hours that they are once again increasing the tariffs, their tariffs on the United States for U.S. goods imported into China. The announcement, it was already 84%. They've now announced that they are upping it to 125%, putting it on par with the 124% tariffs on Chinese goods being imported into the United States. The move represents the latest escalation of the ongoing trade war between the United States and China, which of course is led by the Chinese Communist Party. China indicated that it made the move in response to the U.S. and the raising of tariffs there, but indicated it does not plan to retaliate against any potential additional U.S. tariff increases. So, you know, they said they're going to fight this battle to the end. That was the word out of the mouth of Chinese diplomats and Chinese officials that announced their original tariff increase. They said they were going to fight it to the end. They're now at 125%. And we'll see what the U.S. does in response to this. The Chinese finance ministry said, quote, "The U.S.'s imposition of abnormally high tariffs on China seriously violates international economic and trade rules and also violates basic economic laws and common sense. It is a completely unilaterally bullying and coercive practice." Where's China get off talking about violating basic economic laws and trade rules? Half of China's economy is propped up on patent infringement, intellectual property infringement, and them producing knockoff U.S. goods and importing them into the United States. That's a vast majority or a large part of China's economy. Fake products that look like, seem like, even have the names of U.S. and other companies printed on the side of them that are not made by those companies. So you're gonna have to spare me if you're China. You're gonna have to spare me the outrage I'm supposed to feel over not following and violating economic and trade rules. China doesn't care about the rules. They don't enforce copyright infringement. They don't enforce copyright law in China. Companies are free to make knockoff U.S. goods and import them into the United States under false pretenses. That's a large part of China's economy. Do you remember the Charlotte Pipe story? The Charlotte Pipe, a major manufacturer over in, obviously, the Charlotte area. And back in, it was around 2019, Charlotte Pipe discovered that there was a, or in 2017 rather, Charlotte Pipe discovered, only by accident, that a company called Yatia Plastics of Shenzhen had registered the Charlotte Pipe name, brand, and logo in China in 2010. Yatia Plastics had been producing, marketing, and selling plastic pipes and fittings for sale in China and several Asian countries under the name Charlotte Pipe for years. The U.S. maker of cast iron and plastic pipe and fittings for plumbing systems, Charlotte Pipe and Foundry, had been in operation in the United States for over 118 years at the time. Charlotte Pipe had to retain law firms in China in attempt to recover intellectual property. So why am I supposed to believe that, or why am I supposed to care that China is now boo-hooing over laws and rules and regulations and norms and practices not being followed. I mean, you had a Chinese company ripping off a United States name, brand, logo, and product, selling it in China and importing it to the rest of the world. I mean, it's just absurd. China is not a fair player when it comes to international trade. Now, they have a very lucrative labor market, essentially slave labor. I mean, they pay their employees literally pennies on the dollar to produce so many of the goods that we consume, which has driven prices down for middle-class Americans and has allowed a huge amount of goods to be imported into the country, which you and I have taken advantage of. We've been able to go on Amazon, go to Walmart, go to Target, go to the other big box stores and buy very inexpensive goods, something that we like to do. It's why Amazon is so popular. It's why big box chains like Walmart continue to skyrocket in terms of growth and earnings. People are buying the products at very low prices from these retailers. These products are coming in and are produced from and in China. The continued comments here from the Chinese finance minister saying, quote, given that at the current level of tariffs, there is no market acceptance for U.S. goods exported to China, if the U.S. continues to impose additional tariffs on Chinese goods exported to the U.S., China will ignore it. China's latest retaliation announcement comes as President Donald Trump has been slapping tariffs on U.S. adversaries. He announced earlier this week 124% tariffs on Chinese goods being imported into the United States. And I'll remind you once again, China has a 5-to-1 ratio in terms of a trade imbalance. They export 5 times what they import from the United States. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that every country needs to have a 1-to-1 trade ratio. That's not practical, especially throughout most of the undeveloped world. You're never going to have a ratio that is 1-to-1. And so the attempt here, as it seems from President Donald Trump, from his economic team, people like Peter Navarro, the Treasury Secretary, and other folks, Howard Lutnick, that have surrounded President Trump, is to tighten the bolts, tighten the screws on China in a major way. Because their economy survives only on the fact that they are able to export goods, cheap goods, out of their country and bring them into the largest retail market in the world, which is the United States of America. Donald Trump is not happy with those practices. He feels like China is taking advantage of the U.S. market, stealing jobs from the United States, hurting U.S. manufacturing, hurting U.S. companies, and he wants to see that change. Whether that's right or wrong, that's the strategy. That's exactly the situation that's unfolding right now. Again, whether you agree with it or not, that's what's going on. The president said in a Truth Social post earlier this week, quote, based on the lack of respect that China has shown the world markets, I'm hereby raising the tariff charged to China by the United States of America to 125% effective immediately. At some point, hopefully in the near future, China will realize that the days of ripping off the USA and other countries is no longer sustainable or acceptable. And that's what the president has stuck by to this point. Now, there was an interesting back and forth exchange that took place on MSNBC. I believe this was yesterday. Kevin O'Leary, the guy from Shark Tank, Mr. Wonderful, bald guy, you're familiar with him. He has been speaking out against or speaking out in favor of these tariffs on China. I don't know where he falls politically. He tends to appear on Fox News pretty regularly. He was on CNN earlier this week as well. And he was on MSNBC yesterday talking about these tariffs, talking about China and talking about this whole situation. And it seemed rather baffling to the MSNBC host. Here's Kevin O'Leary yesterday on the wonderful cable news network, MSNBC.
It's the government. They cheat. They steal. They don't play by the rules.
He's talking about China.
I've had enough. And so I would like this thing worked out. I don't care about the volatility. I don't care if Trump ratchets it up 25% a day.
What do you mean? Wait, Kevin. What do you mean you don't care about volatility if volatility has a direct impact on us as the consumers?
Because we have to fix this problem once and for all. It's killing us. It's killing small business in America. It's killing large businesses. all the IP these guys steal. You go back and look at all of their technological advancements, and this is a personal estimation, you're going to find source code from American companies back four decades ago. These guys don't play by the rules. And administration after administration, whether it be European or American, have not dealt with this. It's enough. We've got to solve this problem. Okay. Now, if we have to squeeze Chinese heads to the wall, as I said yesterday when I was testifying, so be it. I'm willing to live with the volatility to get the long situation settled. I want to compete in China. I want to open up those markets.
So there you go. I mean, there's Kevin O'Leary on MSNBC, and you can see the head of the host explode. He's baffled. You want volatility? And Kevin O'Leary, who is not involved in the administration, at least not any seemingly meaningful way that I can discern as of right now, this is a very smart guy, very wealthy man, knows business pretty well. I don't think it's going to be hard for anybody to argue that to the contrary. He claims that the Chinese market has not opened up enough to the United States. He hits on the intellectual property theft, which is rampant in China, a major issue. U.S. companies build a product. Chinese sweatshops essentially reproduce the product and import it to the rest of the world. And you're hearing a similar tune from the administration that Kevin O'Leary was talking about, that there are going to be short-term pains. There's going to be short-term market instability, short-term volatility in the market. But this is something that has to be done long-term for the United States. And surprisingly, the markets, they're not really reacting all that heavily this morning. Dow futures are up about 200 points. It's a little over 0.5% there. S&P futures up about 0.7, 36 points there. And NASDAQ futures around the same place, 132 points there, up about 0.75%. So those futures, which were red around 4 o'clock this morning, down similar numbers, 200-300 points off for the Dow. So nothing significant, regular market open and close kind of stuff. Those futures have turned back to green this morning ahead of the stock market open coming up here in about a little over 2 hours this morning, 9:30, when markets open here on the East Coast. So they don't seem to be reacting too heavily to this announcement from China that they are essentially matching those U.S. tariffs, matching the U.S. 125% that exists right now. And so with that, we'll see what the Trump reaction is, what the administration's reaction is throughout the day today on Friday. I mean, this is a pretty shocking number. In 2024, U.S. exports to China were valued at $143.5 billion. Those are U.S. exports to China, things that we are exporting and importing into China. Imports from China, exports from them, imports into the United States was nearly $500 billion. Right? There's that 5-to-1 imbalance that we're talking about. Their economy is so much more propped up on exporting cheap goods to the United States than the U.S.'s is. That is a major imbalance. Now, will this all shake out in favor of President Trump's idea? Will all of this work out the way that he wants it to? Remains to be seen. As we covered yesterday morning, or 2 days ago maybe, he has relaxed the tariffs on pretty much every other country down to 10% for 90 days, as most of those countries have come to the table. Most of those countries have called diplomats, called officials within the United States and said, hey, we're ready to negotiate. And seemingly in good faith, in an attempt to bring everybody together and to get an actual good deal for the United States, the president said, okay, we're going to lower and get rid of these reciprocal tariffs for 90 days while we negotiate and work through these deals. Everybody but China, who has decided that they are going to do exactly what the president warned them not to do, which was retaliate against the United States trade imbalance. So it's going to be an interesting process to continue to follow. I don't know where the end is. China said they'll fight it to the end, yet they indicate they're done at 125%. So we'll see if the U.S. ratchets that up. Kevin O'Leary says, hell, go 25% a day until you really tighten the bolts there on China. We'll just have to wait and see how all of that plays out. Turning our attention to some other news this morning, a Trump cabinet meeting took place yesterday in Washington, D.C. Trump meeting with various members of his cabinet. Elon Musk making an announcement about $150 billion worth of savings from the Department of Government Efficiency. His original goal is to cut $2 trillion or $1 trillion, cut the federal deficit in half. It's currently $2 trillion. He wanted to find at least $1 trillion in savings. He's at $150 billion right now, a long way to go. Here's Elon Musk, the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, yesterday afternoon.
Well, thanks to your fantastic leadership, this amazing cabinet, and the very talented DOGE team, I'm excited to announce that we anticipate savings in FY26 from reduction of waste and fraud by $150 billion. And I mean, some of it is just absurd, like people getting unemployment insurance who haven't been born yet. I mean, I think anyone can appreciate whether, I mean, come on, that's just crazy. So, some of these things, people ask me, like, well, how are you going to find waste and fraud in the government? I'm like, well, actually just go in any direction. That's how you find it. It's very common. it's as the military would say, target rich environment. So I think we're doing a lot of good and an excellent collaboration with the cabinet to achieve these savings. And it'll actually result in better services for the American people. And then we're going to be spending their tax dollars in a way that is sensible and fair and good.
Now, I want to point something out there for the left that continues to talk about how Elon Musk is essentially controlling the government, right? Like he's in charge of everything. Did you hear what he said at the end of the clip there? We're going to continue our relationship with the cabinet. This is a big misnomer from the left, and it's not a surprise. These individuals don't deal in reality. They don't deal in truth or fact. They deal in emotion, right? We've seen this over the last 3 months. This is a group of individuals that are unwilling to look at the facts, unwilling to look at what is actually going on, and will claim that Elon Musk himself is personally cutting and hacking and slashing within the federal government. But that's never been the case. What the Department of Government Efficiency is doing is going into various federal agencies, various cabinet agencies within the administration, going through their systems, going through their financial reports, whatever sort of systems that they use to keep track of payments going in and out, finding waste and fraud, reporting to the secretaries of those agencies, those entities, many of them cabinet-level officials confirmed by the United States Senate, and saying, hey guys, here's my piece of paper. Here's all the waste and fraud that I found. Right, that's what he's doing. These are some of the things that you should probably look at. And in turn, those cabinet officials are making those cuts. Yeah, I filled in a couple of weeks ago for Pete Callender over on WBT, and I was talking about DOGE, and some idiot moron from the left called in and claimed that Elon Musk himself is doing all of this. But that's just not true. Elon Musk, as a special government employee, does not have the ability to adjust the budget for the Department of Homeland Security. He has zero authority to do so. But if you watch enough mainstream media coverage, if you read enough mainstream media coverage as to what's going on in the world, what's going on in the administration, what's going on in DOGE, you would be, I guess, of no fault of these people, except they're just uninformed, you would believe that Elon Musk is single-handedly doing this stuff himself. You would believe that he is walking around Washington, D.C. with a chainsaw, cutting up various federal agencies and stripping and slashing their budgets. But that's not what's happening. See, one of the big things that I've noticed between Trump 1.0 and Trump 2.0 is the cohesion between the administration and the officials that are surrounding it. It appears that everything that I've seen, all of the various heads of agencies, all of the cabinet level officials, they are all running in the same direction. Now, I'm not saying that didn't happen in 16, but things were obviously much more discombobulated. In many cases, you had individuals not qualified at all leading various federal agencies. It was kind of a mess. It was a, oh my God, we won. Now we got to figure out what we're going to do. Things are very different this time around. That same environment does not exist. And the cohesion that exists Well, the end result is when Elon Musk says, here's a bunch of crap, here's a bunch of waste, fraud, and abuse within your agency, these department heads go, thanks, we're going to make those changes. Right? That's the relationship between DOGE and somebody like EPA, Lee Zeldin, for example. Right? That's how this works. Elon Musk himself is not adjusting spending within federal agencies. Anybody that tells you that is either woefully uninformed or is purposefully masquerading the truth, lying to further a political narrative, further a political agenda. And Elon Musk's time is going to be up. I mean, I think May is when the time runs out for him to be a special government worker. There's a very strict time limit on that. What happens after that, I don't know. He's a busy guy. He's got a space company that flies rockets to the International Space Station, rescues U.S. astronauts that Boeing stranded. He's got a car company that makes some of the most advanced electric vehicles on the market. He's got an internet company that provides broadband high-speed internet to tens of millions of people across the globe. He's a pretty busy guy. And so I don't know, how much longer he's going to exist within the federal government. He's got that timeline. Now, I'm sure there's plenty of ways to work around that and not make him a special government employee, give him a different role. But to me, Elon Musk sets up the infrastructure and then you turn all of the employees loose. DOGE itself has people that work for them. DOGE themselves have the ability to continue this mission without Elon Musk necessarily at the helm. And I think this relationship so far has been pretty good. Now, we're, of course, only seeing the public-facing stuff. But the fact that these agencies are all working towards the same goal. Now, obviously, the goals inside their different agencies are different. But in the broader scope of government, they are all seemingly singing off the same sheet of music. That we got to cut waste. We've got to cut fraud. We've got to cut abuse. That, to me, is very, very encouraging. And it's why DOGE has been so efficient thus far, within less than 3 months, already talking about $150 billion worth of savings in fiscal year 2026. Now, I'll note, that's a long way off from $1 trillion. It's a long way off. And so work's going to continue. And you're seeing states, like here in North Carolina, adopting similar measures, similar groups to DOGE. Here earlier this week in the General Assembly, you had some movement on the DAVE Act, which instructs State Auditor Dave Bolick to begin a similar process to what's going on with DOGE. To look at statewide agencies, look at their budgets, look at their funding, look at one of the big things is positions that have been vacant for up to 6 months. Go through all of that and figure out where waste can be cut. Right? Because we know that there's waste in government. I don't know that if anybody has made any argument to indicate there's not. And it's funny, over the last couple of weeks, I've seen clips pop up on social media, people like Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi back, just even 10 or 15 years ago, talking about waste within the federal government and how they wanted to get rid of waste. And we've got to cut down on waste and we've got to do this and we've got to do that. But see, now that Trump is doing it, it's no longer a good thing. Now that Elon Musk is at the head of the Department of Government Efficiency, which is digging out all of this data and providing it to the individuals that can make the decisions, the various cabinet secretaries and agency heads. Now, of course, Democrats are completely counter to that motion. They're completely counter to cutting government waste, government fraud, and government abuse. I think it's a really bad political look. Individuals in their own households over the last couple of years have had to cut waste. Maybe you were paying for a streaming service that you weren't using that regularly. It was something $10, $12 a month. And you said, yeah, we got to cut this. This is wasteful. We don't need HBO all year. It doesn't make sense financially. We're going to cut that. Right? Because the economy's not been great over the last 4 years. We've seen major issues within the middle class trying to keep up, trying to pay their monthly bills. And this is always something that I think the left really fails to grasp. Why is there so much emphasis on the government waste, government fraud, and government abuse? Well, first of all, the financial reason, right? We're $13.5 trillion in debt, something like that. We run a $2 trillion a year annual deficit. Those are insane numbers. I mean, that would be like you making $100,000 a year and spending $1 million a year, burying yourself in $900,000+ worth of debt every year. You can probably do it for a little bit. Maybe you get away with it for a couple of years, but eventually you're never paying that money back and everything you own is getting taken by the bank. That's how that process works. You're filing for bankruptcy and you're starting over again. But that's how it would work if it was you or I that had this situation. Businesses can't even operate in this manner. But the government is able to. And why I think this has been a big issue for the left to deal with is they're unable to put themselves in the shoes of everyday regular American people that have to make sacrifices, that have to make cuts. They're not always fun. I enjoy going out to eat. I enjoy going out and hanging out with my friends and grabbing a drink. Many Americans have decided they're no longer capable of doing that. As inflation soared, as prices went through the freaking roof, that money was not there for those leisure activities. The money was not there to enjoy those things. You bust your ass 40 hours a week and you still can't afford to buy anything. You still have no money. So the American people have had to hack and slash and cut their own budgets to stay above water. And so they look up at Washington, D.C. They look at state governments and they see all of this garbage that's going on and they go, what the hell is this? I'm having to make sacrifices, but you guys can't? And you know, I was looking at some social media commentary this week. There's been some big changes going on within the National Weather Service. And I fancy myself a weather enthusiast, kind of a hobby of mine. I know it's a little bizarre, but something I enjoy looking at, something I enjoy reading about and following. And there's all this outrage over the National Weather Service. Now, there's not enough people. They canceled the contract with a company that provides artificial intelligence translations for their weather warnings. And, you know, all of that stuff sucks. It's a crappy situation when you have to make those kinds of sacrifices, when you can't have the National Weather Service staffed to the point that you'd like. That sucks. That really, really sucks. But desperate times call for desperate measures. When you are $13.5 trillion in debt, you cannot continue down the same path. It's impossible. The United States is on the precipice of financial ruin if we don't get things turned around. It's not going to happen overnight. I know the left is, it's not working yet, so we got to just stop doing it. I mean, this is the equivalent of turning around a major cargo ship. It is a process that takes a very long time. It does not happen on a dime. It doesn't happen immediately. It doesn't happen with the snap of a finger. But the American people are in favor of it because they themselves have had to make sacrifices. They look up at DC, they look at their state government, they look at their local governments and ask the same question. Why can't you guys make some sacrifices? You're asking me to make sacrifices by raising my taxes. The federal government, you're asking me to spend more money with your ridiculous monetary policies, and you're unwilling to make any sacrifices. I'm having to do them, right? I'm having to cut back on the things that I'm buying, but you're incapable of doing it. That creates an incredible amount of disdain. That creates an incredible amount of resentment against the government. And so that's why I think you're seeing, for the most part, some pretty broad approval numbers on Elon Musk and on Doge. Because people are fed up with it. They've had to do it themselves, and they want their government to have to feel the same pain that they have. Does it suck? Yes. Is it a pretty miserable situation? Yes, absolutely. But what do? Continue down the same path? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And that's what the federal government's doing for the better part of 60 years now. Spend, 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 and just assume that a $13 trillion deficit is going to magically vanish. It's not going to happen. It's impossible. It's not going to happen overnight. It's not going to happen in one administration. This has to be a systematic change of the federal government as a whole. And that's really tough. It's really tough to convince lifelong bureaucrats that the days of overflowing cash reserves are done. It's hard to convince these long-term bureaucrats that everything that you want, you're not necessarily going to get, which has always been the case in the federal government. You want something, boom, wave the magic wand, you get it. Doesn't happen in private business, doesn't happen in people's regular personal finances, but it always happens at the federal government. It's incredibly frustrating. It's something that the American people are disgusted with, and they want to see a change. So already $150 billion worth of cuts for fiscal year 2026. I'm sure that number will continue to grow, but it takes the other side of it as well. It takes Congress to get spending under control as well. And I've got some details on that coming up here in just a few minutes. I want to remind you that if you are enjoying the show this morning, and you're interested in getting some bonus content, including daily show notes and our monthly Zoom call, which will be happening here in just a couple of weeks, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's Patreon, patreon.com/Nick Craig. You can support the show financially, $5, $10 a month, and get access to those show notes and some of that additional content. Plus, you're supporting the continued broadcast here live weekday mornings on YouTube, Rumble, and X at 7 o'clock, and of course, 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. We've got some details coming out of Congress as it relates to federal spending with House Speaker Mike Johnson. We'll get into that coming up here in just a few minutes as the Nick Craig Show continues on a Friday morning live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and wherever you get your podcasts. And good Friday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. We're talking about, you know, government spending, government waste, and the unsustainable situation that we're in right now, where we spend frivolously. We are spending more than we're taking in. I say we're talking about the government here. We're spending more than we're taking in, and it's not sustainable. So House Speaker Mike Johnson has delivered a pledge to deliver $1.5 trillion of spending cuts in a forthcoming mega bill. This is part of Trump's big, beautiful bill that he talks about. This is the step in the right direction, right? Elon Musk is going to find plenty of waste. He's already found $150 billion in waste. He's been on the job, what, less than 3 months. That's a significant amount of money. But it's not all going to be caught up in waste and fraud. The federal government has to change the size and scope. And there's only so much that is going to be able to be cut without Congress stepping in and saying, we've got to make some significant changes. They spend like drunken sailors in Washington, D.C. with no regard to the long-term impacts. And I think that's an accurate statement to make. There's no regard to what this is going to do. But because we want our pet projects now, nobody really wants to stand up and talk about the biggest issue, which is entitlement programs. It's 70% of the freaking budget. That's Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and things of that nature. It's 70% of the budget. I'm not commenting this morning as to how exactly we need to go down that path, but it's something that's going to have to be discussed sooner rather than later. It's an unsustainable system. So House Speaker Mike Johnson told Republicans in a private meeting Wednesday night that they could oust him from his speakership if he doesn't follow through with his fiscal priorities, promising the group that he will follow through, according to three people with direct knowledge of the matter who were granted anonymity to discuss it with Politico. Johnson pledged to abide by the House's budget instructions, including a minimum of $1.5 trillion in spending cuts for a domestic policy mega bill that Republicans are now able to pursue after Thursday's successful vote. The motion to vacate the speaker comes up often in the House GOP conference, but the speaker's comments, the people said, acknowledged that fiscal hawks could trigger a vote on his removal if the speaker doesn't follow through. Several people in the room chuckled after the remark, they said, but hardliners are planning to hold him to it. And good for him. I mean, this is a bold and pretty dramatic thing to say. I'm going to cut $150 trillion out of domestic policy spending. I'm going to cut that money. And if I don't, you can oust me as the House Speaker. This is the kind of discussion and the kind of leadership that we need right now. If Mike Johnson is incapable and can't do it, he's saying, okay, then throw me out and find somebody who can. And I give him credit for saying that. The discussion of his ousters were seen as a concrete expression as to how serious he was and displayed his enthusiasm for moving President Donald Trump's mega bill forward, according to one of the sources speaking to Politico. Some of the fiscal hawks saw it as a blood oath, according to another person. A spokesperson for Johnson's office declined to comment to Politico. No surprise there. But this is exactly what you need. As I mentioned, cutting things with DOGE is only a very small piece of the puzzle. We have to rethink how the federal government works. We need to rethink how we fund the federal government. Because what we're doing right now, as I've noted, is not sustainable. It is not practical long term. It's been going on for decades now, and there seems to be nobody that's willing to actually be serious about it. Now, you hear constantly when election season will be coming around next year, and you'll hear, we got to cut spending, we got to cut this in the government. It's just a bullshit talking point. I mean, there's no other way for me to describe it. Nobody's ever serious about it. But it's easy thing to say. It resonates with the American people because, as I've noted, they have had to make substantial cuts in their budget. They've had to make substantial changes into how they live their lives. But nobody actually wants to follow through on it because the reality is it's painful. The reality is it's not super politically popular. But that's when you have to kind of balance out. And, you know, for Trump, let's just look at his situation for a second. At this point, what does he have to lose? He's going to be a one-term president. He's already served his first term. He's not running for re-election. What does he have to lose? He doesn't have to worry about getting reelected in 2028. That's not a problem that is on his mind. And this is going to be really tough. We played the comment earlier from Kevin O'Leary, and as he was talking about the back and forth escalation of tariffs between China and the United States. Yeah, there's going to be pain there. There's going to be sacrifice there. There's going to be some rocky roads there, some tough times. Absolutely. And so the question is, are you serious about this or not? And unfortunately, I believe that most individuals in Washington, D.C., while they say they're serious about it, while you'll talk to Congress people and members of the House, members of the Senate, you'll ask them, oh, what are your thoughts on cutting government spending? They'll say, oh, absolutely, I'm in favor of it. But when the rubber meets the road and they've got to look at making substantial cuts to the government, they're, in most cases, unwilling to do so. It's a very easy and it's a very good talking point for individuals on both sides of the political aisle. But in this case, it tends to be a bigger issue on the right. I mean, you'll hear from Republicans all over the country about how they want to cut spending. Ask them to do it, and it's a very different story. Oh, we can't. Oh, it's not fair to do this. It's not fair to do that. Trump has got his agenda set. He's got his target set on government spending. He understands the unsustainability that exists right now within our federal government, and he's made it and has continued to make it a major priority for his administration. And he's putting the pressure on the House, he's putting the pressure on the Senate to do just the same. If Congress can't get its spending under control, then there's really no point of discussing this at all. If Congress is unwilling to take drastic and make major changes to in which the way they fund the federal government, then this whole conversation is nothing more than gaslighting, right? That's where the changes need to be made. That's where lawmakers in Washington, D.C. need to be willing to take it on the chin. They need to be willing to take the political punches because it's not going to be very popular. It's not going to be it's not going to be seen in a great light by most of the American people when you're having to hack and slash federal agencies funding wise. But are we now past the point of where things are politically popular and looking at what is the future of the United States' economy look like? But I think that's where Donald Trump is. He's an older guy. He's already served one term. He's a billionaire. He understands the issues at hand, and he's willing to make the sacrifices. He's doing it right now with the tariff battle. He knows that it's going to cause short-term price increases. He knows it's going to have an impact on the American consumer. However, he feels, and he said this, he feels that it's important to get these trade balances, get these tariff balances back in line. And that's going to take time, and it's going to be a process that ain't going to be real pretty. but it's something that needs to happen. And I think you can make the exact same arguments and have the exact same discussions as it relates to federal spending. It's not going to be pretty. It's going to come with an incredible amount of fire and pushback from the left. But it has to be done. We cannot continue acting in this manner. It is unsustainable for our country going forward. So that's what's going on in D.C. That's the latest from House Speaker Mike Johnson. And we'll continue to watch this big bill, the Trump's big agenda bill, work its way through both the House and the Senate. And we'll see what that process looks like. We'll keep a close eye on it right here. Man, this is a pretty horrific story out of New York City this morning. The family of five aboard a tourism helicopter flight that plummeted into the Hudson River Thursday was tragically in New York City to celebrate the birthday of one of their three young children. Have you seen this video? It popped up all over. It popped up all over social media yesterday, and I'll admit it's not the greatest video to watch, but it's amazing, you know, with cell phones and everybody seemingly recording something 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. I mean, you can see the helicopter, the fuselage of the helicopter literally falling from the sky. It looks like part of the tail is gone, the rotors are gone, and you see this helicopter plummet into the Hudson River. I mean, just plummet into the river, falling like a big hunk of metal, which is exactly what it was. Horrific video coming out of New York City with that, and we're learning some additional details this morning. Augustin Escobar, his wife Mercy, and their three kids aged 4, 5, and 11 were killed along with an unidentified pilot when the helicopter went down into the murky waters of the Hudson River yesterday. The family had just arrived in the Big Apple from Barcelona, Spain, to mark the birthday of their children, according to a Spanish newspaper. After touching down in the city, the family decided to spend their first day touring Manhattan by taking a scenic trip overlooking the Statue of Liberty. Before their doomed expedition, Escobar and their kids were all smiling in front of the Bell 206L4 Long Ranger helicopter in a photo that was published by the New York Helicopters Tour. It was on their website. This is the family just minutes before the helicopter had obviously a major mechanical issue and ended up breaking apart, coming into pieces, and falling into the Hudson River. Just a really sad picture to see there. Not long after the group ascended, the unidentified pilot radioed base to warn that they were running low on fuel. Moments later, tragedy struck as the helicopter split in half as it flew over the Hudson between New York and New Jersey around 3:15 p.m., just 16 minutes after takeoff, according to FDNY officials. As you can imagine, the pilot was also killed in the crash. Escobar has since been identified as the global CEO of rail infrastructure at Siemens Mobility, while his wife was the global commerce manager at Siemens Energy, according to her LinkedIn profile. Harrowing video shows the fuselage plummeting upside down, resulting in a large splash near Pier 40 on West Hudson Street and Wall Street. Witnesses described hearing a boom sound at the moment of impact after the helicopter's propellers spun separately out of control into the river. Those victims all pronounced dead on the scene. The owner of the tourist helicopter told the New York Post on Thursday he's, quote, devastated by the tragedy. His name is Michael Roth, and he said, quote, "It's devastating. I'm a father and a grandfather, and to have children on board, I'm devastated. I'm absolutely devastated." He went on by saying, "The only thing I know by watching a video of the helicopter falling down is that the main rotor blades were no longer on the helicopter." Noting, quote, "I haven't seen anything like this in my 30 years being in the business. I've been in the helicopter business for 30 years. The only thing I could guess is really I have no clue. Is it either had to be a bird strike or a main rotor blade failure? I really don't have any idea." Noting that it was horrific to watch and said, you know, these are machines and machines have problems and machines break. So obviously the NTSB is going to be called on scene for this. They're already there investigating as to whether this was a bird strike, whether what potentially caused this helicopter to seemingly fall apart in midair and plummet into the Hudson River. What a horrific story to report this morning. Obviously, there will be an investigation on this, and we'll find out what happened. But man, this picture is just chilling. This picture taken 15 minutes before the entire family, unfortunately lost their life when that helicopter went down in New York City yesterday. As we get more details on it, we'll pass them along right here. Really sad story coming out of New York City this morning. Prayers for the remaining family members and everybody that's going to have to deal with that. A horrific situation, not even in New York City, a full day when that tragedy took place. Turning our attention to some other news this morning, I caught an interesting clip on social media this morning. It was from the CNN show with Scott Jennings. We've played some clips from him. You've probably seen him on social media a decent amount over the last couple of months. He's on the late night CNN show that takes place with Abby Phillips. She's the host of that show. And he's always pushing back and battling back against the left. Right, because their policies are insane. Their ideas make absolutely no sense. And for whatever reason, they think that's going to win favor over with the American people. It's rather bizarre. So here was a discussion that took place, I believe this was last night, and it was surrounding the immigration issue that the United States faces. Right, President Trump ran a very strong presidential campaign in this last election cycle. One of his big issues was illegal immigration. After Joe Biden, the Democrats, waved the green flag in for individuals to illegally come into the country for the better part of 4 years, President Donald Trump has said, if you're illegally in the country, whether you're a violent criminal or not, you're going back. You did not follow the process. You are not seeking a legitimate asylum claim. You are entering the United States under false pretenses to take advantage of America. And it's something that obviously the American people said, hell yeah, we agree with this. We support this. And they overwhelmingly voted for him. I'll remind you, I always have to remind the left this. He won the popular vote and he also won the Electoral College. Right? Those are the messages. His big issues were the economy and immigration, something that the left just really couldn't tackle at all. So even with all of that said, this was last night on CNN with Abby Phillips and Scott Jennings.
I don't think anybody disagrees with that. 7 million means that they're not just going after criminals.
Well, they're going after people who are in the country illegally, right?
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying the criminals, this is a much bigger universe.
Doesn't that make you a criminal?
No, it doesn't.
To come across the border illegally?
Coming into the country illegally is a civil offense. It's not a criminal offense.
Okay, if you come into the country illegally, here's the message. We're going to find you and send you back. I mean, I'm sorry, that's the way it is. And I think the government should pull all the levers at its disposal to find people and pull this off. It's what the American people asked Donald Trump to do. Yes, they should be deporting violent people. Yes, they should be deporting people who committed violent acts before they came here. But at some juncture, if you're going to allow any illegal immigration at all, the message then goes out. Just get here. It'll probably work out for you. That was the last administration. This is a different one.
And, you know, Scott Jennings there says, oh, I'm sorry. I'm not sorry at all. And of course, you know, the left wants to argue semantics. That's not a criminal infraction. It's a civil infraction. You guys are just missing the whole point here, I guess. Individuals coming into the United States illegally, most of the time under false pretenses, or just ignoring customs and border completely and coming across the border without being detected. You guys don't see an issue with that? You guys don't see how that might be very unpopular with the American populace? You guys can't wrap your head around why individuals might not be in favor of that? Is it really? But just I'm going to play the beginning of it again so you can hear the back and forth. This holier than thou. Well, they're not actually criminals, right? They only came into the country illegally. They only came into the country under false pretenses and bogus asylum claims. But yeah, it's not a big deal. Because it's only a civil infraction, not a criminal infraction, according to the left and CNN. Well, I'm going to play the beginning of this again so you can really get into the minds of these individuals.
I don't think anybody disagrees with that. 7 million means that they're not just going after criminals.
Well, they're going after people who are in the country illegally, right?
Yeah, I know, but I'm saying the criminals, this is a much bigger universe.
Doesn't that make you a criminal?
No, it doesn't.
To come across the border illegally?
Coming into the country illegally is a civil offense. It's not a criminal offense.
Go try that in a whole bunch of other countries throughout the world. Go try and illegally immigrate into Mexico, for example. Go try to illegally immigrate into most of Europe. Just show up there. Don't have a visa. Don't have any sort of paperwork that would allow you to go. See what the result is. You're not just going to be able to walk in. You're going to be turned away. You're going to be sent back. And if you refuse to do so, you're probably going to be arrested and deported from the country. That's how the rest of the world works. That's how the rest of the world operates. But for whatever reason, the left wants you to believe and wants you to feel that it's totally okay to do this. I mean, what a slap into the face for individuals that have spent, in some cases, tens of thousands of dollars to come to the United States legally, to work hard to become United States citizens, to become productive and useful members of society. What a slap in the face to those individuals. The pompous, arrogant nature of Abby Phillips and CNN as a whole and all of the rest of their panelists, it's absurd. Crossing the border illegally is, in fact, a crime. I don't know how else you can try and water that down. I don't know how else you can try and claim that's not the case, but in fact, it is. It's illegal to come into the country illegally. Surprise, surprise. We are a country that has geographical borders. We are a country that has laws on the books as it relates to immigration. We don't allow unfettered immigration. It's just not allowed. We don't have that. Under U.S. immigration law, entering the country without authorization is a misdemeanor under 8 U.S.C. 1325, making it a federal crime punishable by up to 6 months in jail. There you go. And that's the law that's on the books. Now, that's not convenient for the left. They want to claim that it's just a civil offense, not a criminal infraction. It's insane. And it's very unpopular. I mean, that's the part of me that I find very interesting. It's very unpopular. Like, if you polled a vast majority of the American public and said, are you okay with individuals coming into the country illegally? Most people would say, hell no. We're not in favor of people breaking laws. We're not in favor of people doing things illegally. And the left is, I don't know why they're continuing down this path. Trump won an overwhelming election victory with immigration being one of his main two issues. And these guys still want to argue semantics over whether it's a civil or criminal offense. They're in the country illegally. It is, in fact, a crime. But this is how the left wants to operate. This is how the left wants to act. I guess go for it. You'll find it to be very unpopular in the elections. You'll find it to be very unpopular with large swaths of the American public. But hey, what do I know? I'm not Abby Phillips. I'm not CNN. I'm not smart enough to have these very tough intellectual conversations with the left. With their, it's not technically a crime. They only came in illegally, but it's not technically a crime, right? Even though that's wrong. That's their justification for it. I mean, how stupid do they think their audience is? How stupid do they think the American people are? That they can gaslight you into believing that it is not illegal to come into the country illegally. I mean, that's what the assertion there is from CNN. That's what the assertion is there from Abby Phillips. How stupid do they think that you are? It's absurd. I'm all in favor of it. Continue down this path. I think it leads to political ruin for the left, and I'm all on board. I can't believe after everything that they saw take place in November that they're continuing down this path. It's remarkable to me. Obviously, the big news this morning continues to be the retaliation tariffs on China, as we brought to you earlier this morning. China has increased tariffs on U.S. imports to 125%. It was at 84. Taking a final look at market futures this morning, things are barely green on the board. Dow futures are fluctuating up about 30 points. S&P futures up 7.5 points. NASDAQ futures up about 35 points. So essentially hovering around zero this morning. We'll see what another busy day looks like on the market today. With that tariff discussion, of course, I'll probably see some more announcements from President Trump and the administration today. We'll track those details and keep you up to date on all of that. Again, I want to remind you, if you are interested in supporting the show financially, head on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig and get those daily show notes. That's going to do it for the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great weekend. We're back with you Monday morning.